The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Today, we're going to be talking about the dangerous immigration problem that the United States is facing. And also, later in the program, we'll talk about the Jerusalem powder keg, a subject that we've talked about before. But the city's been in the news this week, if you've noticed. So we'll spend some time on that in segment two. But first, I want to tell you about my drive through Birmingham last night. I had my TuneIn app blaring as I was listening to KPCG. As it happens, the interview that Joel Hilliker had with Jeremiah Jacques on the Trumpet Hour, an excellent interview, by the way. If you want to go to thetrumpet.com to listen to that or to the KPCG website. On Tuesday, though, you'll remember I announced the fact that KPCG was available on TuneIn, the app for your phone, your device that can connect you to the radio station from anywhere in the world if you have a smartphone. And on Tuesday, we had 6 followers. This morning when I checked it, it was up to 133. So pretty good for a couple of days, pretty good amount of growth in just 2 days' time. There's also, if you notice on that app, there's some responses that have come in to the station regarding the programming, the content that we have available on KPCG. Just a few of those highlights from one listener. It says, finally, a channel the world can listen to. Another one says, this is what the world needs. Another one of our listeners, wow, finally, a radio station that we can enjoy. Or a radio station where we can enjoy fine music, real news, and Bible views all in one place. And then this last one made me smile. Like air, food, and water, listening to the voice has become my newest essential in life. So we've gotten some, as you can see there, some enthusiastic support, some enthusiastic feedback from some of you who listen to this station, this program. I want to read another response we've gotten. This is feedback that came in through email, td@kpcg.fm. And this listener from South Africa says this. It says, since about a week or two ago, something amazing has happened in our home. We normally watch the Key of David and Trumpet Daily videos and do enjoy it immensely, especially the most recent TD about the British Museum. But something different has happened, and I'm enjoying it very much, he says. After dinner, the family moves to the lounge, and we all sit and listen to the TD radio program or to the Trumpet Hour. He says, it feels strange in this modern age of iPads, laptops, and phones to put it all away and simply engage the auditory senses and use the mind to construct images of what's being discussed. He writes, the latest TD on the Battle of Britain was the most awesome radio program I've ever listened to. Well done to both you and the soldiers that edited the audio clips and music into the program. He says, it was a hit in my view. That was the program, by the way, that played yesterday for the Trumpet Daily. And as he brings out there, I did receive quite a lot of help there from Jesse Hester, my producer, working with all those clips and the music and so on. And also Philip Nice put in some heavy-duty work helping to develop that script that we worked from. And we're currently working to convert that program into a TV program as well that we want to put on the air over here in the UK, which hopefully it'll be well received here. It is, after all, about the Battle of Britain, one of Britain's greatest victories. You can go back and listen to that program yesterday It's posted at thetrumpet.com and at KPCG, and you can look for it soon. It'll play on the TV program or the TV station over here, of course, but we'll make it available to you, to all of you, at thetrumpet.com here in the next week or two. But let me just finish this email. Again, this came in from South Africa. And he writes, I don't know what it was like not having a TV in the home for those who used to listen to Mr. Armstrong's World Tomorrow program. But with programs such as these, I can imagine, he says, being glued to the radio for the duration of the program and using one's own mind to construct the scenes is so different. It's so different. Finally, he writes, I wanted to say thank you in the deepest, most sincere way. I'm so privileged and honored to be part of this work and in a hopefully righteous way, proud to back and support what God is doing. That from a faithful KPCG listener from Johannesburg, South Africa. If you'd like to send us your thoughts, just send your feedback, your questions, your suggestions, whatever it is, to td@kpcg.fm. Okay, I want to start by just reading from, this is from Ann Coulter's column, yesterday I believe it is, and she talks about, well, her new book coming out, Adios America, about the immigration problem. And in this particular column, she talks about just how disinterested the media is in this subject. I mean, America's being transformed before our eyes, and few in the media seem to care. She says, I'm impressed by the coolness and steadiness of our media in suppressing any news about immigration. It's as if they've built a triple-layer fence with border guards around immigration topics. And guess what? Their fence is working. It's working. No one's really talking about it. I mean, she is and a few others, and that's it. How many thousands of news stories have there been on Ferguson, ISIS, Chris Christie's Bridgegate, or men becoming women? It's a good question. How many thousands of stories are out there that really are not even that important or significant at all? There's all kinds of them, as she brings out. And then she gets pretty blunt here. But the media will never tell you about Mexicans gang raping a lesbian in Richmond, an Indian immigrant in San Francisco importing 12-year-old girls he bought from their parents for sex, or three children being beheaded by Mexicans in Baltimore. Don't Americans have a right to know about the cultures flooding into our country? Well, you would think they do have a right. But no one's telling them the reality. It says, this isn't a natural transformation. It is purely the result of government policy. But our media don't care to discuss the issue. In fact, they get mad whenever Americans find out what they're doing with immigration. They get mad. I mentioned that interview on the Trumpet Hour. Mr. Hilliker talking to Jeremiah Jacques about the administration releasing 3,700 threat level one criminals, murderers in some cases, hardened criminals, just releasing them out into American society. Do you think this is a problem that's going to explode in America's face? It already is in many ways, like Ms. Coulter brings out there in that column. You think about the latest Trumpet magazine, Isaiah 1:7, cities being burned with fire. It's not just the problem from those, you know, inner city communities. It's also from what's coming in from the outside. Let's look at Deuteronomy 28. Just take you through a few scriptures here before we cut away to a break. Coulter's book as I said earlier. It's titled Adios America. I haven't read it yet, but given the title and knowing what God has prophesied, I have a feeling Adios America is an important book. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 43, it says, "The stranger that is within you shall get up above you very high, and you shall come down very low." This passage, by the way, was discussed in the other article that my father recently wrote about the growing race crisis, race wars, I think back in November, December 2014. But this is happening. It's happening in Britain. It's happening in the United States. It's happening in Israel. We'll talk more about Jerusalem and the future of Jerusalem and Israel and the division that's there currently in the second segment. But drop down to verse 52, it says, "And he shall besiege you in all your gates until your high fenced walls come down, wherein you trusted, throughout all your land. And he shall besiege you in all your gates throughout all your land, which the Lord your God has given you." I mean, God gave us this land, he's saying. He gave you these blessings. And yet you're going to be besieged. Mr. Armstrong used to talk about this siege being an economic siege, trade war. But notice verse 52 there also says that America's high and fenced walls are coming down. That's talking about, among other things, that's talking about America's wide open southern border. The walls, the fences, they're coming down, and foreigners are flooding into the land. Ms. Coulter brings out in the column how it's happened here in Britain as well. Illegal immigration, legal immigration in some cases, just flooding into our nations. And this is clearly the way many in Washington want it. They want it to be this way. Going back to that article, this is November, December 2014. My father said, "Do you realize that the immigration problem befalling America right now is actually prophesied here in Deuteronomy? The influx of more races into the United States will only worsen the siege of Ezekiel." Now he's talking there about what's prophesied in the early chapters of Ezekiel. The siege coming upon American cities. This is only going to make matters worse. Those illegals streaming in from the south. He writes, "But why does God allow this to happen?" Notice the last part of verse 52. We just read this. God gave Israel their land. See, God gave it. He writes, "Did you know God gave America and Britain the land they have? The U.S. has been the beneficiary of the richest land on earth, and Britain received a bountiful island necessary for the rise of its empire. And yet, because we have chosen not to acknowledge Him as providing it, God is allowing our lands to be overrun by foreigners." God's allowing this. You're seeing it happen. That latest trumpet, as I mentioned, with cities burning on the cover. Isaiah 1 and verse 7, it says, "Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers, devour it in your presence. And it's desolate as overthrown by strangers." That's happening now. You see it in America. You see it in Britain. These nations being devoured and overthrown by foreigners, by strangers, as it says there. And of course, God is allowing this all to happen because we've forgotten Him. We've forgotten that He gave us this land. He gave us these blessings. It's amazing, really, any way that you look at it. And my father brings this out in that article from December 2014. It's amazing just how swift this demise is, this destruction that's coming upon the United States in particular. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on 101.3 KPCG. The live stream is at kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Jerusalem. The name means City of Peace, and yet no city has had a history filled with more war and bloodshed. No city has suffered like Jerusalem. It has been the focal point of religious wars throughout the centuries. Jerusalem plays a central role in the beliefs of three major religions: Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. To the Arabs and Jews, Jerusalem is a national symbol. While both sides have attempted to form peace treaties, Jerusalem continually remains the center of dispute. Why all this conflict surrounding Jerusalem? Will the Israeli-Palestinian peace process put an end to the chaos? Will there ever be peace in Jerusalem? The Holy Bible provides the answers concerning the future of this great city. Your Bible states that the tensions revolving around Jerusalem are only going to worsen before they get better. This city will be engaged in some of the worst violence ever to occur in the history of man. But there is great hope for Jerusalem. At the conclusion of these painful events, Jerusalem will experience glory and magnificence as no city ever has, and there will finally be peace in Jerusalem. To understand the important role Jerusalem will play in future events, visit our literature library on thetrumpet.com and request our free booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
And Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel, and it must remain undivided.
That was then-Senator Barack Obama back in 2008, before he became president of the United States, and at a time, of course, when he desperately needed Jewish support during his presidential run. The city of Jerusalem, if you look back at the history, it was under Ottoman rule until 1917, and then British rule, of course, up until 1948. And then in 1948, when the United Nations made Israel a state with strong backing from the United States and from Britain, the Jews controlled the western half of Jerusalem. And they have ever since. Ever since Israel was established as a state after 1948, of course, the nation of Jordan controlled the east, and then that changed in 1967 when Israel gained East Jerusalem in the 1967 war after it was under attack by several of its neighbors. So again, though, going back to 1948, the establishment of the Jewish state. Since that time, Israel's seat of government has been in West Jerusalem. It's where the president, where the prime minister, all the cabinet members, it's where they have their offices. It's where parliament meets and legislates. To deny that Jerusalem is capital of Israel is to deny reality.
And Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel, and it must remain undivided.
Now, since 1995, if you look even at U.S. law, there's been a law in the books that has directed the president to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. But since that time, every 6 months or so, the president issues a waiver to put off that decision or that action. Over the past 20 years, U.S. presidents, not just Mr. Obama, but the presidents before him, they haven't wanted anything to interfere with the negotiations over Palestinian statehood and the final status of Jerusalem. And so the policy basically has been to avoid coming out and showing that They believe Jerusalem is the capital. But as you just heard, I mean, that was something that President Obama campaigned on back in 2008. Now, that brings me to a 12-year-old American boy named Menachem Zivitotsky. You might have seen something in the news about him just this week. He was born in Jerusalem. He's an American. He was born, though, in Jerusalem, and he wanted the U.S. government to print on his passport that he was born in Jerusalem, Israel.
And Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel, and it must remain undivided.
Menachem was born in the city. Senator Obama said, will remain Jerusalem's capital. And yet when Menachem's family went to the U.S. consulate to apply for that passport, the consulate refused the boy's request. They refused to put Jerusalem, Israel on his passport. And so the Zivitovskis decided to sue the U.S. government. And the case worked its way all the way up to the Supreme Court. And that's what made the news this past week. The Supreme Court decided to deny that boy's request to have Jerusalem, Israel printed on his passport. The Supreme Court, in other words, backed the Obama administration on this matter. Let me read to you what it said at CNN. This is a column that appeared there the other day. Time to be honest about Israel's capital, the title says. Official U.S. policy says the status of Jerusalem is unresolved, subject to the outcome of Israeli-Palestinian negotiations. But while this position is based on the laudable wish to avoid harming the prospects for Israeli-Palestinian peace, there are surely better ways to achieve the same goal without denying reality. Surely there are better ways to achieve this goal without denying what's real, what's obvious. But as it happens, the Obama administration, as we saw in the news this week, the administration is prepared to go all the way to the Supreme Court to, in fact, deny reality.
And Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel, and it must remain undivided.
Well, so much for that campaign promise. Here's what Jonathan Tobin had to say. His article, The Supreme Court Decision on Jerusalem, lets Mr. Obama ignore reality. It says the administration thinks being upheld on this point is good for America because it allows it to continue maintaining the fiction that Jerusalem isn't part of Israel. He says the bizarre refusal of the U.S. to formally acknowledge that even West Jerusalem, the section that has always been part of Israel since May 1948, is part of the Jewish state, also makes peace less likely. He concludes with this: the administration or any of its predecessors could have simply moved the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, even if they insisted that the eastern part was not part of Israel. But they have all refused, making it even more difficult for Palestinians to recognize Israel's legitimacy. I mean, that's true enough. Why should the Palestinians recognize Israel's legitimacy or Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, or even West Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, when even the United States won't do that? Let me just play for you what the State Department said. This is when the Jerusalem status came into the news over previous controversial issues. And this is from 2012, when the State Department couldn't say what the capital of Israel is. Notice.
Is it the State Department's position that Jerusalem is not part of Israel?
Well, you know that our position on Jerusalem has not changed. The first media note was issued in error without appropriate clearances. We reissued the note to make clear that Acting Undersecretary for or Kathy Stevens will be traveling to Algiers, Doha, Amman, Tel Aviv, and Jerusalem. With regard to our Jerusalem policy, it's a permanent status issue. It's got to be resolved through the negotiations between the parties.
Is it the view of the United States that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, notwithstanding the question about the embassy, the location of the U.S. embassy?
We are not going to prejudge the outcome of those negotiations, including the final status of Jerusalem.
Does that mean that you do not regard Jerusalem as the capital of Israel?
Jerusalem is a permanent status issue. It's got to be resolved through negotiations.
That seems to suggest that you do not regard Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Is that correct?
I have just spoken to this issue, and I have nothing further to say on it.
Yeah. The question, and I think there's a lot of people out there who are interested in hearing a real answer, and not saying and not trying to duck and say that this has got to be resolved by negotiations between the two sides.
What is
the capital of Israel?
Our policy with regard to Jerusalem is it has to be solved through negotiations. That's all I have to say on this issue.
What is the capital of Israel?
Our embassy, as you know, is located in Tel Aviv.
So does that mean that you regard Tel Aviv as the capital of Israel?
The issue on Jerusalem has to be settled through negotiations. Lalit, thank you.
As one commentator noted it, it almost sounds like an Abbott and Costello routine. It's comical, the back and forth, not being able to say it. That was the State Department. Here's what the White House said around the same time, this too, from 2012.
What city does this administration consider to be the capital of Israel, Jerusalem or Tel Aviv?
I haven't had that question in a while. Our position has not changed, Connie. Can we...
What's the capital?
You know our position now.
I don't. Really
no, no. She doesn't know. She doesn't know. That's why she asked.
She does know.
I don't.
She does not know. She just said she doesn't know.
Come on, Lester, I call on Christy. Go ahead.
They just can't bring themselves to say it. Well, you know our position. Well, what is your position? Well, you know it. I want to go back to that CNN column. Time to be honest about Israel's capital. It says U.S. policy should reflect the fact that the western side of the city is not in play. It never has been. That's me. She says the western side of the city is not in play because the only people who reject Israeli sovereignty over the West are those who reject Israel's right to exist. It's quite a statement. And it says a lot, doesn't it? When official U.S. policy is more in alignment with those who reject Israel's right to exist than it is with Israel's policy. It says a lot about where we are in today's world. She concludes, why then does Washington not acknowledge that Western Jerusalem, at the very least, is Israel's capital? It's a good question. Why not at least acknowledge that the western half is Israel's capital? Well, it's because of this hostility toward the Jewish state. After the campaign, of course, ended in 2008, well, we've seen over these past 6-7 years, we've seen the true colors of this administration with respect to Israel and its policies regarding Israel and the Palestinians and so on. I want to tell you about another book. This one's coming out June 23rd. It's not out yet. The title is Ally, My Journey Across the American-Israeli Divide. It's by Michael Oren. We heard him speak in Jerusalem several years ago. He's a well-educated man, a gifted orator, and an accomplished writer as well, and not what you would consider to be an ultra-conservative by any means. His book, though, you may recall he served as the Israeli ambassador to the United States, as it explains here from a column I'm about to read. This is John Podoritz at the New York Post. Talking about this book that's coming out June 23rd, Ally, My Journey Across the American-Israeli Divide. Podoritz says, I'm not sure that in the annals of diplomatic history there's ever been anything quite like this astonishing account of Oren's 4 years as Israel's ambassador in Washington. It's an ultimate insider story told while all the players save Oren are still in place. The Israeli prime minister he serves still holds office, and the administration to which he was the ambassador will remain in power until January 2017. It's not that there's lots of breaking news in Ally that will startle people. Rather, it makes news on almost every page with its incredibly detailed account of the root hostility of the Obama administration toward the Jewish state. That's the real headline here. The root hostility of the Obama administration toward the Jewish state. Page after page, detail after detail.
And Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel, and it must remain undivided.
Continuing from this column, it says, what makes the details especially credible is that Oren is no flame-breathing Israeli right-winger, but very much, and at times distressingly, an establishment creature, and one, moreover, who makes it clear he drank the Obama Hope and Change Kool-Aid in 2008. Indeed, he now serves in Israel's Knesset, not as a member of Bibi Netanyahu's Likud party, but of the new centrist Kulanu party. He's in the centrist party today. And yet, what's his take on American policy based on his experience as ambassador from 2009 to 2013? He speaks, of course, as an insider. He was there. He dealt with U.S. officials. He dealt with administrators from the current administration in Washington. Let's notice Zechariah 14. I just want to conclude the program today by talking some about Jerusalem. If you've followed us for very long, you know that Jerusalem is the powder keg. We've talked before at length about the divide between the United States and Israel. We've talked before about how so many prophecies are going to revolve right around the city of Jerusalem. We've talked often about how Jerusalem is in fact God's city. God's going to establish his headquarters in that city, that war-torn city, that divided city, that city that's been right at the heart of so much violence and bloodshed on this earth. Notice this prophecy, Zechariah 14 and verse 1. It says, behold, the day of the Lord comes, and your spoil shall be divided in the midst of you, for I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished. And half the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Zechariah here is giving us a big overview of events that lead right up to the return of Jesus Christ. He says, for I will gather all nations against Jerusalem. That's referring to when Jesus Christ will gather the armies of this world just before his return to that city. But what happens before that? It says the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, it says. That's referring to the king of the north conquering Jerusalem shortly after he conquers the king of the south. Radical Islam. But before all of that, notice, it says, half of the city shall go forth into captivity. My father's talked about how this refers to the Palestinians forcibly taking control of half the city. Of course, they already control East Jerusalem, just in terms of the population. But this is something we've been talking about. We've been forecasting this for many, many years. This is why this prophecy and others, we'll look at a few others here in just a second. But this is why we've been telling you to watch Jerusalem. For years and years we've been saying this. This is the trigger. Jerusalem, what happens in Jerusalem? The division of the city. It's going to trigger a series of events that culminate in the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. That's the significance. You can read the rest of this chapter. Look at verse 4, where it talks about Christ setting foot on the Mount of Olives. That's what it all leads to. But before all of that, as I say, the city will be divided by force. It will be divided by force. Let's look over at Hosea, another minor prophet, Hosea chapter 5. Get your Bible, read along with me. See what God says in these prophecies. Hosea chapter 5, a well-known verse. If you've followed this work for very long, as I say, verse 13, when Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, then went Ephraim to the Assyrian and sent to King Jareb. Yet could he not heal you, nor cure you of your wound, that wound, as my father's written before, on numerous occasions. It's referring to the Arab-Israeli peace process and how that since the early 1990s, that process has gradually weakened Israel. You've seen how it plays out. Pressure put upon Israel to pull back, to withdraw, to lay down its arms, to go back to the bargaining table. And then the terrorists just keep pushing and pushing and pushing, firing rockets, gaining territory, denying Israel's legitimacy. Daniel chapter 11. Let's look at this one. Now today you do look at Israel, as we've talked about in recent months, and you do see a stronger, more unified government than what you've seen, 10, 15 years ago. That's for sure. I think there are a number of people in Israel that have awakened to the fact that this is a gaping wound pulling out of regions in Lebanon, pulling out of Gaza. It's left them, well, really without much in the way of defense. So vulnerable. And then you look at the emergence of Iran as the regional powerhouse and the spread of nuclear weapons, weapons of mass destruction. How that Iran's push for a nuclear weapon is triggering all these other events all across the region. What a neighborhood for Israel to live in. Well, you can see from that passage in Hosea that it's going to get so bad that they're going to reach out to the power in Europe for help and for assistance. You can certainly see why they wouldn't go to the United States. I mean, since 1948, that's typically who Israel relies upon. And leave aside all of the campaign promises and the talk about how close this relationship is. Look at reality. Look at the actions. Look at the behavior. Daniel 11 and verse 40, it says, and at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. God says there's going to be a clash between the kings of the north, that's in Europe, and the king of the south, radical Islam headed up by Iran. Catholic Europe against radical Islam, in other words. Another crusade, another religious war. Notice, though, how it revolves around Jerusalem. Verse 44, but tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. I mean, this gets into other prophecies. What happens there toward the end of the tribulation? You can read more on this in the book of Revelation. That final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire in Europe. It's going to be troubled by events in Asia. It's going to be troubled by this forming alliance between Russia and China. And it'll lash out at those Asiatic hordes. Verse 45, and he, this is speaking of the religious head now, of this Euro beast, and he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. That's talking about Jerusalem. That's talking about a religious head moving his headquarters to Jerusalem, that glorious holy mountain. It says, and he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. So it's all going to, as I say, culminate in the return of Jesus Christ, when Christ will return and establish God's headquarters in Jerusalem. Look at Zechariah 12, just one last verse here. Zechariah 12 and verse 3. It says, and in that day will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces, though all the people of the earth be gathered together against it. I mean, in these latter days, what a burden Jerusalem has been. Bitterly divided. Nations like the United States that can't even recognize the city as a capital of Israel. Campaign promises that haven't been kept. Laws passed by Congress that haven't been obeyed. Look at how much of a burdensome stone it's been. All that have gotten involved in this city. But all that is going to change. It won't be that way forever. God still has an intense interest in this city. Jerusalem, the city of peace. God is more interested in this city than any other city on earth, because this is his city. It's the city he has chosen to be the eternal capital of the whole world, ultimately the entire universe. For more on this, you need to get the Jerusalem in Prophecy booklet. We offer it freely to you at thetrumpet.com. You can send a request to td@kpcg.fm if you'd like to as well. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on 101.3 KPCG or the live stream at kpcg.fm. Thank you for listening today, and we'll see you tomorrow.